Thanks for listening to the Best of Herd Podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday from 12 to 3 Eastern, 9 to noon Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and FS1. Find your local station for the Herd at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every day on the iHeartRadio app by searching Herd.
This is the Best of the Herd with Colin Cowherd on Fox Sports Radio.
Ah, this is the Herd. Wherever you may be and however you may be listening, we are live in beautiful Los Angeles on iHeartRadio, Fox Sports Radio, and FS1. I am rolling up my sleeves today. In 1 hour from now, Greg Cosell will be on our NFL Meat Sandwich. Joy Taylor is joining me. Peter King, too. How are you, Joy?
Rolling up your sleeves? It's a work day today?
You know, work. Smarter, not harder.
I actually came to set with my sleeves rolled up. So
it's a work day
ready.
For us.
Yes.
All right. I'm going to ask a question.
Okay.
Why do people play Powerball?
To win money.
And what will that money allow you to do, Joy?
Live comfortably.
And you know what they call that in the financial sector? That's go to hell money. You get so much money, you can tell your boss, blankety, blankety, blankety.
Right.
I want to work 3 days a week. I want to work 2 days a week. I'm not going to go on that business trip. That's why we play the Powerball. Because we know that the odds are terrible. You're never going to win it. And by the way, a lot of people win and don't quit their jobs. But they want leverage. I want to work 3 days a week. I want weekends off. I want to say. And if you're good at your job, your boss is like, you know what? I'll take 3 days a week. I'll take it. I'd rather have you in the building than not. So Kawhi Leonard's taking time off. It's called load management. Everybody don't like it. I don't like it. Okay, there's a dance being played in the NBA right now. He didn't play last night. And the dance is all these teams want to be viewed as player-friendly because players are now conjoining. They're joining forces. Players now are saying, let's go here, let's go here, let's go there. And you want to be seen as player-friendly. The Raptors and the Clippers don't love this. But he's the best player in the NBA. Need a bucket? He's the best player. Need a stop? He's the best player. So he has leverage. And everybody's freaking out about it. But it's why y'all play the lottery. Many of you, if you won even $6-7 million, wouldn't quit. Forget the $200 million. You won $600-700 million. A lot of you just want to have leverage. Kawhi's got it. This is not the 8th best player on the Bucks. It's the best player in the world. And for the first time in 15 years, the best player in the world's not named LeBron. It's named Kawhi, and he's got leverage. Now, I had dinner last night. My wife does this from time to time. She said, I've got to meet some new people. And I said, okay, let's meet some new people. So we invite some people over. And one of the guys, charming guy, owns a tech company, about 70 employees. And all of his employees are young tech millennials, men, women. And during the dinner, he starts talking about, when you're good, they call the shots. I don't. They want a day off, I give it to them. They show up late, I don't grumble about it. They want 1% of the company, 1% of a branch, 5% of a branch. If they're good, I give it to them. Why? Because there are not many great tech people out there, and there's a million tech jobs out there. You can't fill them all. They got leverage. Kawhi's got leverage. We're playing the lottery to get leverage. That's the game in life. We're all trying to get it. And by the way, Kawhi was upfront about this. It was never deceptive. He negotiated this. He's like, listen, I'll come. You got to keep Lou Williams. You got to get me Paul George, and I get 20 games off. It was never deceptive. The Clippers knew it. Doc knew it. They got basically a clone in Paul George. He is Kawhi. Not as good, but he is Kawhi. So it works perfectly. This doesn't work for everybody, and everybody can't get this. And load management started with the Spurs when they were a dynasty. Then it moved to LeBron, and now it moves to Kawhi. You get what's happening. They're the young tech workers of the NBA. Everybody, and I hear this one too. This is what I hear. Oh, this is going to hurt the league financially. We have 35 sports networks. We're all dying for content. If TNT and ESPN tomorrow said we're bailing on the NBA, we'd get it. NBC'd get it. CBS would get it. Vice would get it. National Geographic, Fox News, MSNBC, everybody would get it. We wouldn't even have to be a sports network. Somebody would buy it and create a sports network and just throw NBA games up. NFL, major college football, NBA, World Cup, Olympics. Networks are fighting over that stuff. It gets ratings. So now, Chris Broussard was on our show yesterday. He doesn't like it. And this momentum and this opinion is now building a real following.
This is just beyond the pale, in my opinion. It really is. And Adam, look, the league doesn't like this. You think this could hurt the players' pocketbooks, and maybe that's what'll change, and that's why the players' associations get involved, because the next TV deal, that will lower their offers, so that will affect the salary cap and what the players are making. So the players' association should get involved and be like, look, you got to play when you're healthy. Play the games.
Now, I disagree with that. Again, I think if the NBA was on the open market, some rich zillionaire would create a TV network and just buy it. We'd bid on it. NBC, CBS, non-sports networks. We're all dying for content and cable news, cable sports, cable TV. But the other thing is, I'm old enough. I'm not one of these 22-year-old bloggers. Okay, I've been around for 40 years, 30 doing this. This has always been a players' league. It's always been a stars' league. The two things people freak out about, oh, my God, we've got a dynasty. The whole league's built on a dynasty dating back to the 50s and 60s with the Celtics. The whole league's a dynasty. Y'all tell me about parity. I don't know. I've seen the Clippers and Lakers. One of those two's winning it. We got dynasties. We just haven't figured out which one's the dynasty yet. It's one of those two. And players have always run this league. I mean, Shaq's like, get me out of here. I want to go to Orlando's too small for me. I want to go to Los Angeles. And he did. He made it happen. So we're all good. No different between the great young tech millennial, Kawhi Leonard, and why we're all playing the Powerball. We're all seeking leverage. And if you have it, use it. Let me shift to this. Oh, look at this story. This was called a hot take. Well. Once again, my perceived hot take is becoming reality. Some teams, according to NFL sources, an NFL reporter, two sources saying if the Browns continue to struggle this year, OBJ could get traded. Where did we hear that first? Oh, yours truly. Let's be honest about this. OBJ to Cleveland hasn't worked, doesn't work, and will not work. And there's a word, there's a reason why it won't work. The word is forced. Anytime a relationship is forced, the parents want you to get married, but you really don't want to get married, it's forced. Great relationships are effortless. You know, the couple, the married couple's been around for 30 years together. They can sit and watch TV and have the time of their lives because they love their company. This has never worked. By the way, yesterday, once again, that forced word came up. Remember early in the season? When OBJ, the watch, and the orange Bentley, and I said, you know, he's trying to create, this is an unnatural relationship. He's a global icon that got steered over and traded over to the clown show of the NFL Cleveland. From house in L.A., house in New York, models in Paris, Cleveland. So he buys an orange Bentley, he does the watch visor, he's trying to force Instagram followers. And then in about week two or three, we started talking about how Freddie Kitchens had him doing goofy plays. He was forcing the ball to OBJ. Yesterday, Baker Mayfield came out. Listen to the wording on Baker Mayfield.
I think, you know, people had this picture perfect thing that it was going to be sunshine and rainbows. He was going to have a whole lot of one-on-ones. It's Odell Beckham. He's going to have double coverage. We have to find ways to format things to get him the ball. And force feed him early on to where he can make an impact before we can, you know, have the perfect look to give him a shot play. And I think that's something that we learned the hard way. But, you know, I think as the weeks have gone on, we're continuing to improve on how to get the ball to him.
Did you notice the word in there? Force feed him the ball. OBJ, orange Bentley, visor, look at me, forcing the relationship. Freddie Kitchens having him throw the ball, forcing OBJ. Baker Mayfield, we have to force feeding the ball. Tell me the relationship that works when you use the word force. Great relationships. You can just go on a car ride with your wife or your husband, and you just like to be, you like to be together. You just go watch a basketball game. You hang out on the couch. You watch a goofy show. You just like hanging out. It's not forced. That's when relationships work. Edelman, Brady, it's like they're joined at the hip. Aqib Talib came on a couple days ago. I said, who's the toughest guy to defend? He goes, Edelman. He's not the biggest, not the fastest, not the strongest. He and Brady are like, you know, simpatico. They're just like, they're like the same brain wiring. They're just, it's natural. Gronk, Brady, natural. Montana Rice, natural. They're not even always the most talented people. Some guys just work together. Some guys just, Derek Fisher and Kobe. It just worked. Who can explain it? I mean, you can't. It just did. This doesn't work. It's forced. OBJ is their fourth leading receiver in the red zone. And for that talent, one touchdown, you know, for the record, he has the same number of targets as Jarvis Landry. But yet, and they're both terrific, yet we feel like OBJ is being ignored. No. We're trying to force this thing to be more than it is. Nobody's complaining about Jarvis Landry's targets. He has 90 catches, average last 4 years. But he feels natural to Cleveland. Jarvis Landry was with a bad football team, and then he goes to Cleveland, and you're like, oh, Jarvis Landry's going to be elevated. OBJ's a superstar. Let's jam him into a team that has a rookie head coach in a city he never really wanted. He told you with the goat shoes. He told you on Instagram he wanted to be a Patriot. He wanted to play with Brady. He wanted to go to L.A. I talked to him one time. He never mentioned Cleveland. He mentioned three teams. He never mentioned Cleveland once. This is not going to work. It's never worked. It's not working now. Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, Lew Alcindor was in Milwaukee. It wasn't big enough. Shaq was in Orlando. It wasn't big enough. My entire life, I've watched businesses merge. And you can tell within 6 months, you're like, oh, yeah, that cable company buys that media company, and that just doesn't work. And that coffee company buys that food company, and Amazon buys Whole Foods. Is that working? I don't like Whole Foods as much as I. And it's like mergers all the time. Does it work? It doesn't work. It doesn't feel right. But in life, when stuff is right, it's right fast. We were talking about this the other day. Joy and I talked about this yesterday. You watch the Lakers, and the chemistry's really good, really fast. I'm not saying they're going to win a championship, but it's really good 5 games in. It's probably going to be good. It's probably going to be good. Chris Paul and Blake Griffin, 5 years in, they still didn't like each other. It didn't look good early. It didn't look good late. It just never felt right. Chris Paul didn't respect him. Blake Griffin thought Chris was annoying. DeAndre Jordan was the guy in the middle. Lob City gave you highlights. It never really fit. It never really fit. And this idea that, well, Jarvis Landry, Odell Beckham are boys. It'll be great. They're friends. Friends isn't business. Russell Westbrook and Harden are friends. Yeah, I'm sure they are. That's not business. This is business. I can have friends. That's what I do after work. I got business. But my business doesn't get in the way of my friends, and my friends don't get in the way of my business. And sometimes I don't even need a friend at business, and I don't need my business people to talk to my friends. They're separate entities. They're separate areas. So these talks, I've said it before. I know you gave up a lot, a starter, a couple of draft picks. I'd move OBJ. It's never felt natural. It doesn't work. I don't care about Jarvis and OBJ or guys. They hang out. I don't care about any of that. It doesn't work. Force, 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 force. Baker yesterday. We got force feed in the ball. Nah. That. Thank you. If I have to hear that word again, if you can't figure it out, if you're not hearing what I'm hearing, I can't help you. But that's the word I keep hearing. Force OBJ. Force OBJ. We got to force feed him the ball. Even OBJ in his private life, he's forcing it. Visor, watch, cleats, pants, look at me. Does he want to do all this stuff? No, he wants to be on a good team, less chaos, veteran quarterback, where he can be icing on a great cake. Here, if he's not the cake and the icing, they don't win. Doesn't work.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio, FS1, and the iHeartRadio app.
All right, so Mitch Trubisky. I'm not a big fan of Mitch Trubisky, Chicago Bears. I'm not. But apparently there was a bunch of TVs and stuff on in the facility. When you walk through an NFL facility, I used to cover the Tampa Bay Buccaneers a couple years. There's TVs all over the facility. You know, they're in the hallways. Players are watching them. GMs are watching them. They got this. I get texts during the show from NFL people. People are watching stuff all the time for breaking news and stuff, right? Well, this show's journalism, so of course you'd watch. So anyway, Trubisky said yesterday, I had to turn the TVs off because it's like all they're doing is ripping us. Here's Mitch Trubisky.
Trying to get some of these TVs in the building turned off because you got too many people talking on TV about us and what they think about us, what we should do, what we are and what we're not. But they don't really know who we are or what we're capable of, people, or what we're going through or what we're thinking. It's just the outside viewers looking in. And so, tunnel vision, earmuffs, and just come to work every day and try to get better and get back to what we know we're capable of doing.
By the way, totally agree. I could not believe the media criticizing Mitch Trubisky. Listen, sports media people are incredibly thin-skinned. We criticize for a living. So if you rip me, I don't give a rip. Because I rip, you rip. It doesn't matter. I don't care what your rip is. You shouldn't care what mine is. I have an opinion, so do you. I'm not going to respond to your opinion of my opinions. That's been my rule from day one on this show for 30 years. I got opinions. You have yours about me. I'm not reacting to yours about mine. Bottom line here is, would you want to work at a place if you were a sports writer and you were in your, you know, the LA Times, the New York Times, and there was a TV up there ripping your work? Do you think it would make you a better writer or create self-doubt? You wouldn't want to watch that. When you go to Best Buy, I got a Best Buy right next to my house. What do they have on TV? Planet Earth, Avatar, or an in-house feed giving you the brightest images ever. Here's what they don't have on TV. A guy saying, why would you buy a television? You can watch this stuff on your laptop. This place stinks. What do you think Best Buy is selling when you walk in? TV, best image possible. Derek Jeter. Somebody once asked him about, how do you get through slumps? And he goes, I don't surround myself with negative people. I don't want negative people around me. I try to turn it off if it gets negative. You know, and everybody's like, oh, you're surrounded by yes men. And he's like, yes, man. I am, all season. Off season, different. But in baseball season, I don't want you around in my coconut when I'm in an 0-for-14 slump and I got a Red Sox series coming up at Fenway. I don't want these athletes. These are professional athletes, all athletes, college or pro. So much of this is psychological. We've seen great players, David Duvall, the golfer, Greg Norman, the golfer, Chris Webber, A-Rod, great athletes. The game gets into their head. They can't hit free throws, and they're 75%, 80% free throw shooters. We've seen LeBron in a final against Dallas. Can't post up J.J. Barea. The game gets into his head. So I have no problem with, and I'm not a big Mitch Trubisky fan, but would you rather have Baker Mayfield, who reacts to everything, or Mitch Trubisky, who doesn't want to listen to anything? I'll take Trubisky.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific.
40 years, NFL film, a guy I've been bringing on for Thursdays for a long time in the football season and sometimes out of the football season, NFL Films, Greg Cosell. Let's start with the game of the weekend. Lamar Jackson against New England. There were times it looked like New England was guessing. Sometimes when you face Lamar, I think you do have to guess, and they guessed wrong. And when they guessed right, sometimes his escapability is just tough to defend. When you watch the tape professionally, Greg, anything jump out that you saw in film that you didn't notice during the game, or did you have some great conclusion when it was all done?
Well, truth be told, Colin, I don't want to like ruin your view of me, but on Sunday night, because it was postponed from April, I did not see the game live because I was at Fleetwood Mac.
Oh, hey, listen, Fleetwood Mac is excellent even today.
Hey, they were postponed from April to Sunday night. I could not go. I mean, I was sitting in the 11th row center. How can you pass that up?
So on film, what did you say?
On film, you know, I still think that Stevie Nicks sounds pretty good. Oh, anyway, you're talking about the Ravens. So anyway, they're really multiple with their personnel packages, their formations, their shifts, their motions. They give a defense an awful lot to digest before the ball's even snapped.
Yeah.
And obviously, because of Jackson, he is a major part of that. So, and they spread you out. They expand you horizontally because they attack you that way. They expand your defense. It's not just like you can get tight and stop the run game. So there's an awful lot to digest. And then they give you the Jackson-designed runs, which they did quite a bit. I think there were three of them on the first possession of the game.
Yes.
And now all of a sudden, you know, that's a factor as well. The thing that was fascinating to me in the game, as the game progressed, is for the most part, and the tape tells you this, because the tape tells you how they want to play offense, is they played offense really limiting what Jackson did as a passer, and they were able to score 30 offensive points because they had the one defensive touchdown.
Right.
And that fascinated me. Now, there were a few key third down completions, and they were third and short for the most part, where they could use natural rub elements, the natural pick elements, and define the read and the throw. But for the most part, they played this game with their run game, and they were able to score 30 points.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's funny sometimes, you know, the Dallas Cowboys run offense and, you know, everybody wants to bury the run offense, but Baltimore and Dallas are near the league lead in points and they run the football. It's not Green Bay and Aaron Rodgers. You know, I think sometimes we forget that you can control the clock with the run game and offensive linemen love the run game. I mean, I think this, you know, it's the pendulum swinging, Greg.
More teams are playing with a fullback, Colin. Have you noticed that?
Yep. By the way, San Francisco, you think it's Garoppolo. Go look at they run 7% of the time. San Francisco's now a run team. Baltimore's a run team. Dallas is a run team. They're three
of the top. Oakland's a
run team. Let's go to Oakland, by the way. So they play tonight. This Josh Jacobs kid.
Love him.
What a first. Nobody gets a good shot at him. His first step, Aqib Talib the other day said, you come in and you're just like, okay, that guy is game one. He's a player. What's the film say?
I think he's a top five back in the league right now. I think he's a combination of power, agility. He makes people miss. His lower body, I mean, from the waist down, he is strong. I mean, he's a 220-pound back now. He's not a scat back, although there are times he looks like one.
Yeah.
And what John Gruden does, and he's always been this way, and he's always talked about it, it's the illusion of complexity. He gives you a lot of different personnel packages, a lot of different looks, a lot of different formations just to run basic plays. And, you know, he'll line up with three tight ends, two tight ends, a fullback, three wide, all different personnel packages, all different looks, particularly on the first 10, 12, 15 plays of the game. And then you've got to figure out what all that means, and then he'll run basic plays. So there's a lot, you know, I don't want to call it window dressing because coaches don't think of it that way, and nothing's really window dressing. It's all done for a reason. But that's what he does. It's the illusion of complexity with a ton of different looks, and then they run base plays.
Yeah. I want to go last week. I was shocked. Brandon Allen moved the ball on Cleveland. Baker couldn't move it on Denver. And either Denver's a team that's lost four games by one possession, three on the final element, the final kick. Is Denver better than we thought? Is Cleveland worse than we thought? Let's talk about the Browns' offense now. OBJ doesn't feel he's getting it. What is the film saying? Is it saying anything different than a month ago?
You know, I think what you're seeing is, and when it comes to Baker, I think what made him a really good prospect and made him very good as a rookie were two things. Number one, he was an aggressive, turn it loose thrower. And number two, he was accurate. And I think this year he's, for the most part, not all the time. I mean, you know, it's easy to bury him now because for many reasons unrelated to football. But I think there have been too many examples this year, too many snaps in which he's not turned it loose. And he's been inaccurate. And he's particularly missed routine open throws. And you can't do that in the NFL.
You can't.
And he's missed a few too many of those this year. And their run game, look, Chubb's still getting the ball. It's not as if they do not give it to Chubb. You know, even this week he had 20 carries. Now he only had 65 yards. But I still think to stabilize their offense, it needs to be Chubb. And particularly this week, they play the Bills, who have now started to struggle a bit with their run defense. And there's reasons for that, obviously. But I think this is a week where they need to work off Chubb. But Mayfield needs to become more accurate, and he needs to be a little more aggressive. But I think there's a little bit of a loss of confidence just watching him.
I want to shift to the Vikings-Cowboys play this weekend. And I made the argument yesterday. They're the same team. They both have a great back. excellent rosters, stars everywhere. One team has both coaches win, but they're both on the hot seat. One quarterback got paid and people complained about it. One's gonna get paid and people are gonna complain about it. They have nice elements on the perimeter. But the difference is I like Dak more than Kirk Cousins because I think he's a little more clutch. There's just something about him. I trust him.
I would agree with you.
And whatever that is. And I think he's a little more mobile in an era where I like my quarterback to be able to move. So when I list quarterbacks, I get to about the 13th, 14th best guy in the league, and I got Dak, and then right beneath him, Cousins. I like Dallas this weekend. Is Minnesota, statistically, Kirk is great. But do you see that team trying to make it Dalvin Cook's team and not Kirk? Are they? What's the coaching staff say when you watch Minnesota?
Well, I think Minnesota's. I think they want to be a run-first team without question. They want it to be Dalvin Cook and then work off that because their play-action pass game is what makes their pass game go with straight play-action and a lot of play-action boot. The issue they're having is the interior three on their offensive line has not played particularly well throughout much of this season, which sort of gets pushed aside because Cook has done very, very well, but they've struggled inside. Just to make a point in this particular game, I think one area to look at is the Dallas pass game and their receivers, because I don't think that the corners for the Vikings, Xavier Rhodes, Trey Waynes, they now mix in Mike Hughes, and he'll start to get more snaps. I don't think Waynes and Rhodes have played particularly well this year, and I think they're beatable players. And I think with Cooper and Gallup, the Cowboys are going to look at those matchups and feel like we can create some big play opportunities.
You know, it's funny with Dak. When Dak moves and throws, you know, he gets the ball there. It is the most inartistic looking thing in the world. There is something, though, Greg. There is an it thing. There are guys that aren't pretty. I've seen it in the NBA. I've seen it in baseball. Dak tends to, you know, he rolled out, threw it to the tight end. Good God, it was sloppy. It was under. It was just, it looked awful.
Right.
But there is something to be said. He makes a lot of plays when I need him to. And the film maybe says something else, but you know, I'm kind of tired about hearing how he's the limitation. God, I watched him Sunday and I'm like, you know, he made the plays when I needed him.
He's a good quarterback. I mean, we get caught up in lists. You know that. Everybody wants a list. Where does he rank? Is he a top 10? Is he a top 5? He's a good quarterback. You can win with Dak Prescott.
Yes.
There's not an issue with that.
All right, let's go to Jimmy G. For the first time this year, Greg Cosell joining us, the Niners said, hey, we can't run the ball, and our D-line's not great. Jimmy, we need you to carry us tonight. I thought he looked good. I thought he looked confident. I think he made some tight throws. I liked what I saw against Arizona, closer than we thought. What did you make of it?
Oh, I thought it was a really strong game for him, and I think he's been incrementally getting better each week. And he's just past the point where he started a full season worth of games. People forget that. I thought he was really decisive with his reads and his throws. His ball placement was really precise.
Yes.
He had the look of a confident quarterback, understanding his route concepts in relation to the coverage and knowing immediately where he had to go with the ball based on that. So he eliminated what wasn't there and isolated what was there quickly and decisively. And I thought he threw the ball exceptionally well.
By the way, they face Seattle. Pete Carroll doesn't have a great defense this year. It's actually led by Russell Wilson. Can Seattle's defense stack up?
Well, it's funny you say that because even though they gave up a lot to Jameis Winston this past weekend, I was fascinated watching them. They were really aggressive with blitz, more so than we're used to seeing Seattle. They played a lot of man coverage, particularly on third down. Now, obviously, they didn't do anything great on defense. I'm just talking about what they did tactically. And I think they know that they have to figure some things out, that they have to try to be aggressive and challenging and not just sit back because they've not gotten the pass rush that they expected from Onsaw and Clowney.
That's right.
And they've now understood just as Houston did, that Clowney is not an edge pass rusher, that they have to move him around. So you can't just line him up on the edge and say, go get the quarterback. That's probably the worst part of Clowney's game.
Yeah, isn't that interesting? So let's go to Russell Wilson. I'm not a big MVP discussion guy. I don't talk about the high. I just don't give a rip. I really don't care about that stuff. But I said if I had to give it, nobody watched the Tampa Bay game. It was on TV in about 8% of the country.
Right.
And if you'd seen that game on TV, Russell Wilson would be the runaway MVP because he's ridiculous. They rely on him heavily. I think he's having his best year. He's the best I've ever seen him play, and he's your big play of the week.
Yeah, he's a fascinating player, and they're a fascinating team because they still start their offense with the run game, which a lot of people lose sight of. But Wilson has played exceptionally well this year, although I don't think he's played any differently, Colin. The numbers just make it seem like he's played better. But I think he's playing the same way that he has for the last couple of years. But we're going to look at a touchdown here, and let's start it right now. This required a really, really good throw. It's not a complex concept, but it requires – these are the red zone throws that you have to make.
Yes.
And this is why some teams are good in the red zone and others are not. So what they do here is they line up with three wide receivers to the wide side of the field. And we're going to name who these receivers are: Metcalf, then Moore, and then Lockett, from outside to in. And then it's man-to-man. And you can see the matchups that the Bucs have. It's man-to-man coverage against the trips to that side. Now, Lockett's going to run this route here. He's going to run to the corner. And what they're going to do when he does this is they want to make sure that that corner is clean so that there's no other defenders there. So since they know it's man-to-man, they simply have Metcalf and Moore run these little shallow routes to eat up those man-to-man defenders so there's space. And this is so critical, because what happens in the red zone? In the red zone, you have to make really precise ball placement throws. There's not a lot of room. So that doesn't seem like much of a play, Colin. You know, it just seems, oh, it's a 3 or 4 yard touchdown. But that's a big time throw, and not every quarterback is going to make that throw.
Yeah, it's the throw Trent Dilfer always says. A lot of guys, big arms, can throw deep, or they can dump the screen. It's that little rainbow throw, where you got to have just enough velocity and you just got to drop it 18 yards, just drop it over the corner. And as our TV audience is watching, there's not a football length. It's a perfect throw.
No, and that's when I always use the term precise ball placement as opposed to accuracy, and that's a perfect example of precise ball placement, and it was demanded on that throw.
Greg Cosell, I'm glad you enjoyed Stevie Nicks and Fleetwood Mac. Very happy for you.
I appreciate it. Thank you so much, and I did.
Want more Herd? The Herd streams 24 hours a day, 7 days a week within the iHeartRadio app. Search Herd to listen live or on demand whenever you'd like.
The Lamar Jackson story is fascinating to me. Bill Polian's a Hall of Fame general manager. He's made a million right decisions, and he said Lamar Jackson coming out of college, he goes, I think he's more of a receiver. He got a lot of heat for that. You got a lot of heat. My takeaway was always, number one, first, it was perfectly fine to have an opinion on a quarterback who is not just mobile. He's the fastest player on every field. He's not a mobile quarterback. Steve Young's a mobile quarterback. He runs a 4.3. You saw him against Seattle, New England. He's outrunning corners. It was okay to say, I got to be honest, I think I'd try him out at receiver too. Okay. Well, he was a good college quarterback. Yeah, but he didn't throw the ball perfectly. In fact, I had two scouting directors I talked to because I asked about it, and they said, I don't know. That was the reaction. I don't know. For the record, as good as he's been this year, he's 20th in passing yards, 17th in passing touchdowns, and 14th in passer rating. He's still a work in progress. Number two, we've seen kind of elements of this before. It's called Kaepernick, Tim Tebow, Michael Vick, where running quarterbacks work. They just don't last, or they don't develop into what you think. And most GMs with first-round pick, second-round pick quarterbacks, and that's what I thought he was, a second-round pick quarterback, mid to late second round, a project more than a prospect, is that you're trying to draft somebody for 15 years. And there's elements of his game we've seen before, and there were questions about, is he going to last? Is he going to develop? Because he's not a naturally beautiful thrower. Now, by the way, either is Philip Rivers. Not everybody is. But, you know, that was the knock on Deshaun Watson a little. He's still not a beautiful, elegant thrower. Everybody wants Aaron Rodgers and Patrick Mahomes, not the way it works. And the third thing was, we're in a really tough time. We're in a different time. We've segued from pocket quarterback. Seemingly, that's a negative now. So my whole life it was, get a pocket quarterback. I say that now and people are like, whoa, what do you mean pocket quarterback? To mobile quarterback, to now in high school, college, and the pros, should we have our best athlete at quarterback? So there's going to be some guesses. There's going to be some whiffs. There's going to be some mistakes at a position. That's the hardest position in American sports. I mean, I thought Dak was an NFL tight end. He's really good. I thought Johnny Manziel and Tim Tebow should never have been drafted. They both got drafted in the first round, and I'm just a radio TV moron. So I never saw NFL for Manziel and Tebow. I never saw it for Dak. I was right with two, really wrong for one. Russell Wilson, I just wasn't paying attention. Trubisky, I didn't like anything about him. The Bears loved it. Deshaun Watson, I thought was excellent, and 10 teams passed on him. You just don't know. You can have strong opinions. Bill Polian's a Hall of Famer. We're moving into a different time now where, you know, we kind of, do you put your, high school coaches are dealing with this. College coaches are dealing with this. I watch Kyler Murray. I still can't get over his size, but it works. The game's different. It's coached different. It's okay to have an opinion on quarterbacks. It is the hardest position to draft, and it's right in the middle of this sea change, and it's happening. And there are no perfect GMs. The two scouting directors I talked to on Lamar were like, "Ugh." I mean, that was their facial expression. I don't know. So you want everybody to be perfect? The guy is a 4-3 absurd. He's just flying past Bobby Wagner. He's flying past Patriot corners. It's okay to say, I try him a wide receiver too. It's okay. It's not the end of the world. We all get opinions on this stuff.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio, FS1, and the iHeartRadio app.
Bama LSU play this weekend. And let me talk about this for a couple minutes. I don't think it's a rivalry, because to be a rivalry, they would have to go back and forth on the winning thing. Alabama's going to win it, and they're going to win it decisively, because this series is about Nick Saban. Nick Saban was 4-1 against Alabama when he coached LSU. He's 10-3 in this series against LSU when he's coaching Bama. Nick Saban has been in this game 18 times, and he's won 14, and he's going to roll Saturday. This is not a rivalry. This is hammer meets a nail. LSU has been shut out at home two of the last three times they faced Alabama. Bama's won 8 straight. Colin, but LSU added some new schematic stuff. Offensively, they throw the ball. Yeah, LSU did not find a new concept. Okay, you know what LSU did? They went to the Saints, hired a guy, and updated to this century, because they've been one of the most antiquated passing games in college football for 20 years, and they're finally throwing it like everybody else. They joined the party. They've not elevated anything. Burrow's a nice quarterback. He's got good targets. They've got great athletes. They're not doing anything Nick Saban hasn't seen 100 times. This is not a rivalry. Bama's if Tua plays, Bama's winning by 2 touchdowns. They're both off byes. Who do you trust off a bye? Nick Saban or Ed Orgeron? This is seal versus shark. Yes, they both swim. Yes, they're both in water. You know who's going to win every time. This is not LSU-Bama. This is Nick Saban's series. He owns it. He's defined it. There is no rivalry. Take his side. And I trust Bama and their defense and their coaching way more than LSU. I'll take Bama big.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific. Ready to make some sweet cash? Colin's going to give you his 3 sure bets for the college football weekend. It's time for Colin's Marquee 3. Penn State at Minnesota.
I'll take the Nittany Lions, Penn State -7. I do realize it's the biggest game for the Golden Gophers in probably a decade. Penn State is maybe top 2 or 3 defense in the country. James Franklin, wherever he goes, he builds defenses, and they're terrific. Top 4 in everything that matters, and they've also been good against good teams. Penn State's 2-0 against ranked opponents this year. They've won 8 of their last 9 road games, so I don't doubt they'll be good. I don't doubt they'll be good on the road. Minnesota has played one of the easiest schedules in the country, and not only that, they've been very lucky. They have not played a starting quarterback. They've faced nothing but backup quarterbacks since week 2. They haven't faced the top 50 team this year. And historically, this is a big step up in class for them. I like Penn State to win this game. It'll be close. It'll be competitive. But I'll take them 28-20.
Kansas State at Texas.
I like the Longhorns. They're coming off a bye. By the way, Tom Herman off a loss 12 times in his career. He's 10-2. Sam Ehlinger is a very good quarterback for Texas. He stunk against TCU. Worst game of his career. But at home, he's fantastic. 70% completions, 340 yards a game. He's back home. He's comfortable. Again, Texas is a very good team that picks up first downs. of the 130 Division I teams, their third and third down offense. They're going to control the clock. They're also getting their best running back back, two guys in the secondary back. Nothing against Kansas State. Nice upset win over Oklahoma. I get it. Texas off a bye at home against the Kansas State offense that stinks bad. They can't pass. One-dimensional. Texas wins and covers 34-24.
LSU at Alabama.
I'll take Bama minus 6.5. They've won 8 straight meetings. This series is really about Nick Saban. When he was at LSU, he won 4 out of 5. At Alabama, he's won 10 out of 13 against LSU. Off a bye, he'll beat Ed Orgeron. Last 3 times these guys have played, LSU averages 3 points a game. Now they have Joe Burrow, the backup at Ohio State, who's been really, really good. But it's not like these are wild, crazy passing concepts. They just moved out of the Stone Age, throwing the ball for the first time in 2 decades. LSU's defense, I do not trust. On the road, they're allowing almost 30 points a game. Whose defense do you trust here? What coach do you trust? And by the way, Tua's going to get drafted ahead of Joe Burrow in the NFL, so if he's healthy, and I think he mostly is, I trust him too. Alabama, also more than LSU, takes the ball away. They've got 18 takeaways this year. I like Bama to win and roll 32-20. I feel great. I got my favorites this week. I'm taking Penn State's a favorite. Texas is a favorite. And Bama is a favorite. And I feel great about my picks.